When people think of successful business entrepreneurs, they often think of the young headline grabbers like Mark Zuckerberg. But actually, you're more likely to find a baby boomer in their 50s or 60s launching a new business. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. More and more entrepreneurs are finding niches for creative business ventures here in Iowa. We'll meet some of them this hour. Two attorneys who started a nutrition bar company, an actuary who now owns a specialty tannery, and a video producer who found her entrepreneurial spirit by moving to Des Moines. Also, Mike Cowell, executive director of the Business Innovation Zone, will join us. A story of entrepreneurial success? Share it this hour. We'll start right after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. You know, when people think of successful business entrepreneurs, what comes to mind? Well, we often think of the young headline grabbers, Mark Zuckerberg, for instance. But actually, you're more likely to find a baby boomer in their 50s or 60s launching a new business. And more entrepreneurs are finding niches for creative business ventures right here in Iowa. We'll meet some of them this hour, but first, let's start by getting an overview on this topic from Mike Caldwell. He is the executive director of the Business Innovation Zone in Des Moines. He joins us from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Des Moines. Mike, good afternoon.
Well, thank you. Good to be here.
Tell us, many people listening right now have never heard of the Business Innovation Zone. What is it? What are your goals? What's the need you're meeting?
So the goals of the biz are really to provide an opportunity for those with an idea of starting a business, a high-growth potential business, a place to begin. So it's run by the Greater Des Moines Partnership, which is a regional chamber of commerce here in the Des Moines area. And it's really there to provide a beginning point. Many people come with questions about, well, how do I get started? I have an idea. Do I need to incorporate? How do I get my product made? How do I do my marketing? As much as anything, it's just a place to start and a place to network and connect.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been around?
The business has been in place for just over 5 years.
5 years. Okay. So take us a little bit more in detail through what happens when people approach you, when you see an opportunity. What happens first? People come to you, or you reach out to potential people?
Well, we do both. The outreach that we do is more general as far as involvement with different organizations that are entrepreneurial in nature. A lot of the ideas are coming out of the tech industries. So I do get some involvement with different user groups and meetup groups. For the most part, people come to me. We aren't aggressive about reaching out to people, but people come to us often with the idea. And it's safe to say that everybody is different. We have people who have never run a business before on one end of the spectrum to others that are what are known as serial entrepreneurs. I've had several recently that returned to the area. They're very, very experienced in running businesses, but they're new to Des Moines, they're new to the Midwest, or they're returning. A lot of our people we're seeing now are coming back to raise children, or in some cases to come back to be with grandkids.
Mm-hmm. You say that the opportunities are all different. The people walking through your door are
absolutely
calling you all different. What can you boil it down to? A few questions you would ask to see if this is viable, whether you pursue a relationship?
Absolutely. So I think the most important thing that I ask is what they've done to validate that there's a market. So to go a little deeper in that, it's one thing to be really passionate about your own product, and it's one thing that your friends are passionate about your product. But the real question is, will people actually buy the product? And that's a different question. It's a lot harder to ask someone, will you give me $50 for my product, than it is to say, do you like my product? And that's a very simplistic view, but what it really gets down into is market development, market research, looking at the viability of the product in the market, understanding, are there competitors out there? Not only direct competitors, because a lot of people believe, hey, this is a new and unique product, but what does it replace? Are those competitive products replaceable? And then from there, how do they plan to take it into the market? Do they plan to sell it themselves? Do they plan to go through retail channels? For many people, how you get a product into a store is a bit of a mystery, and there are many parties in between for a lot of good reasons, and each one adds some cost to that process. So understanding that what it's going to take to get their product into the market.
Can you tell us the number of people on average contact you in a month, for instance, just at the very first stage, entry level?
Probably close to 30 a month.
30 a month. And of those 30, how many are kind of vetted away because they realize that they hadn't thought about it enough?
Well, and I'll be honest with you, it's almost all self-vetted. Our goal at the biz and my goal is not to tell somebody they have a bad idea or a good idea. That's for them to figure out. But what it is to ask them the questions that allows them to vet it themselves.
Right. You ask the hard questions.
I do.
And they put two and two together whether that's works out.
Well, in many cases, it's a matter of both knowing the answer to those questions and understanding the amount of time and money it's going to take. Mm-hmm. To come back to your question, I would say one or two in 30 will actually pursue the idea to a level of taking a product into the market.
Okay. We have Mike Caldwell with us, Executive Director of the Business Innovation Zone in Des Moines, describing what they do as we talk about entrepreneurship in Iowa this hour. We want to reach out to you, our River to River listeners. Did something in your life a move to a second career in a business as an entrepreneur? We want to hear from you this hour. We'll be hearing from several people this hour who have done just that. They said in their 30s, 40s, maybe 50s, said, I'm going to change. I'm going to do something completely different. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Facebook. And Twitter, tweet us at IPR Talk. Mike Caldwell, please stand by. We want to talk now, join our conversation, Nada Brown and Michael Termini. They are co-owners of Be Amazing Foods in our studio in Iowa City. Nada and Michael, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having
us.
Thank
you.
Maybe I can turn to you, Nada, first of all. You, too, made a huge career change. You are still, and we're practicing attorneys. Tell us your story.
Well, I have been an attorney for 27 years, and we started Be Amazing Foods in 1999. The trigger to make the change was actually an unfortunate set of circumstances. I was diagnosed with cancer, and in 99, as I was going through my cancer recovery, I totally changed my life, my expectations, and the way I approached everything, actually. Mm-hmm. One of those changes was that I became a very clean eater. And as I was standing in the grocery store and reading labels, I realized that a lot of the snack bars on the shelves were really disguised candy bars. And Michael and I started talking, and we saw this as a great opportunity. And from that, we developed, starting in our kitchen, a snack bar that is made with 50% fresh vegetables and fruit, and the other 50% is equally healthy ingredients, whole grains, all good stuff for you. And since we started in our kitchen and we simply started building it, and we then moved to a local restaurant and worked the second shift, which was very hard because we practiced in the day. And then starting about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we went to this restaurant and made our bars. But we began to test it in the marketplace, and people started buying it. We were thrilled.
How big are you now? Incidentally, people can find out more about your product, about your service, by going to be-amazingfoods.com. Michael, pick it up from there.
You bet. Well, our products are currently available throughout many of the Hy-Vees, both here in Cedar Rapids and New Pioneer as well. We're in, I think we just picked up 169-store chain the other day, so we're probably around 400 stores across the country. We're pretty strong from the Mississippi all the way to New York.
Wow. And this has been, though, we have to consider, over a decade of work.
No, actually, just to correct Nada, it was 2009.
Sorry.
2009.
So this
okay,
is
we
our
didn't
third year. This is our third year. It was
okay,
just one mistake.
I'm so sorry.
All the more astounding to hear about your growth in only 3 years' time. What have been your biggest challenges, perhaps unexpected challenges along the way? Because this was not your
your fish
correct.
Pond
we are,
here.
We are not it? Industry players. And as Mike Colwell alluded to, not being industry players, I think the distribution mechanisms are some of the challenges I think that present themselves to non-industry players. There is this is a very mature business in terms of how the product goes from our plant and being manufactured and placed in a package and to actually getting in a store and then into your hand as a retail consumer. That'll go through a distributor, that'll be placed by a broker, and all of those relationships are complicated and need to be managed in an effective way, and they all have a cost associated with them that come out of it as well.
What happens when the big boys and girls, let's say it that way, in the industry, discover that you are a little blip on the radar, but a quickly growing blip on the radar? Did they discover you and react?
Well, you hope they react by knocking on your door and saying, we'd like to buy you. certainly, you know, we our goal is to create value for our stakeholders, and whether that is ultimately in a realization of profitability in the sale of a company in years to come or in terms of profitability along the way.
Okay. So have you dropped your work in litigation in law completely, or does that figure into this business somehow too?
Well, certainly we're still in the early stage, so we're in this transition where we're phasing out of law and working on bars full time more and more. There are times that the day starts pretty early, around 6:30 or 7, and doesn't end until 11, and that's just the nature of the beast when you're doing this kind of a thing, where you really are required to work two full time environments, and when you're pursuing your passion, that's what you do.
Nada, tell me, what difference does it make? Because of course, as an attorney for 26 years, I think you said, you also work long hours. It can be very, very difficult work. And Michael just said you can have 16 hours here. What is the difference in the workday for you? Why does this please you more?
You know, this pleases me a lot because this has become my passion. And healthy eating, helping people to change their life, that's what it's all about. And so for me, because this is such a this comes from truly the heart, my heart, of what this business, how it started and what it's about, it's really fun for me to wake up and to get going on making bars and being in this industry that over which I have, no background knowledge. And as a lawyer, as wonderful a profession as it is, you know, in litigation, you wake up and you start arguing at 8:30 in court, and you argue all day. So that can be very, very taxing.
Mike Colwell in Des Moines, when you hear this as the executive director of the Business Innovation Zone there, when you hear this story, is it typical? What comes to mind when you hear this story?
It is typical, and not in the specifics, but in general, that it's driven by passion, that they're willing to work an extraordinary number of hours to a tremendous amount of their resources, both in their time and their finances. I think that's something that a lot of people don't understand. They see success stories. You talked about Mark Zuckerberg, and they see the dollar signs because that's what gets published 20 years later or 10 years later when there is that successful exit or IPO or whatever. And I think a lot of people don't understand that it's mostly driven by passion. And certainly, you always hope there's a financial reward. It's a much riskier environment when you own your own company. But I think that it is truly typical of those who go a long way. They are driven by their passion.
Okay, we want to reach out to our River to River listeners and ask you if something in your life triggered a move to a second career, perhaps a business that you started up. What sparked your entrepreneurial spirit? 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, and you can tweet us at IPR Talk if that's what you prefer. This is really, you mentioned Mark Zuckerberg again, as I did at the outset. Over the past decade, this is interesting, according to a study by the Kauffman Foundation in Kansas City, an entrepreneurship institute, over the past decade, the highest rate of entrepreneurial activity belongs to those in this 55 to 64 age group, according to the study. 22, the age bracket to 20 to 34 was the lowest rate. That's Mark Zuckerberg's group. The study, Kaufman's study, shows about 23% of new entrepreneurs in 2010 were in this 55 to 64 age group, compared with 15% in 1996. So this is growing. How do you account for that, Mike?
Well, I think there's several factors. One, I think it's the barrier to entry, the bar you have to get over to start a business has come down a long ways. Today, it's not necessarily important to have your own office physically. There are a lot of people running their own businesses, especially in the professional services space. They're running off of a laptop computer from a home desk or are truly just mobile all day. I think the second factor has been the change in the work world, the corporate work world. In 25 years ago, when you came out of college and went to work for a large corporation, it was a safe assumption to say you'd probably be employed for life, that if you did well by them, they'd do well by you, and that's the way the world worked. Well, that's changed. And I think there's a lot of people in that age range who have either been let go from a job through a downsizing or whatever you want to call it, or have just made the decision that they want more control over their life. I think the lack of job security, inherent job security that now exists in the market in these larger companies has driven a lot of people to say, I want to look at an alternative.
Mm-hmm. And yet as we age, we tend to get more conservative. We start thinking and have to think more often than not about health issues, about health insurance issues. Is that one of the big hindrances?
It is. Yeah. I think that you'll see a lot of those in those age ranges where spouses, one will continue to work in an environment where insurance is available, one will go off and start something new. The key issue, and I, as someone who's in his 50s, the key issue is something called a pre-existing condition. It's real simple that if you have an existing condition, it's very hard, almost impossible, to buy insurance that could cover that condition if you're on your own. I'm not an insurance expert, but I've dealt with the issue myself. So that is one of the key issues, and you'll oftentimes see the other spouse staying in a situation, and hopefully one they enjoy, where the benefits come through in a group policy.
A key issue. So you have to be watching as the ruling of the Supreme Court, the decision that will be handed.
Absolutely.
What difference will that make? What questions are you asking yourself?
You know, there's so many differences based on which way they may or may not go, and there's so many parts of that bill. I'm not sure I'm equipped to comment, but I know that the one piece about being able to get past the pre-existing condition is probably the biggest one. I think the other one is just more competitive environment where more players are in the market. That's the other one I'm going to be watching. You'll see many groups who would like to find a way to start their own, and I don't know the technical name, but basically their own ability to group up together and buy insurance as a group. Startup groups, you talked about the different percentages. They're actually fairly evenly spread across a large age range. So if there was a way for entrepreneurs and small businesses to gather together, then those group policies become very, very valuable to them.
Nada Brown, co-owner of Be Amazing Foods, you said this had its genesis for you, your company, just 3 years ago in the unfortunate diagnosis for you in breast cancer. You're a cancer survivor. Was that a concern for you and Michael together, too? Where do we get our health care from, or was that not one of your greatest concerns before you took the leap?
We have health coverage, and we treasure that coverage.
Okay.
So that was not as
in this case. So what were your other concerns before you took the leap? What was foremost in your mind, Michael?
In large part, I often reflect, Nate and I talk about this, we're too stupid to know different. I mean, we've been building the plane as we go. When we started the recipes, we started getting traction. When we launched a new Pioneer, we started getting traction. It's been just one foot in front of the other. I don't know that we were ever smart enough to have a great grand plan of where we're going to get to. And then, you know, we said, well, we can go national with this, and one thing sort of led to the other. So we were probably stunned by how much capital it has taken to get this far. But I don't know that we've ever really figured it out over, what were all the steps ahead of time.
What resources have you used outside of your business that have become particularly valuable?
Certainly folks like Mike Caldwell are going to be invaluable in terms of getting access to more of the capital resources that are available in Iowa. We've launched this with our personal net worth and through help with the state with the demo fund. As we continue to branch out and get bigger, we'll need more capital as we look toward really the end of the year and being able to bring in more capital. And folks like Mike will be instrumental in helping us get there.
Mike Caldwell, you see a lot of entrepreneurs. And as you said, I love that term, serial entrepreneurs, coming through your door, getting in touch with you. You would be a good person to tell us if there is an ideal entrepreneurial personality, or is that all over the spectrum?
Yeah, I don't think there is. I think it depends on what you're doing. So I'll give you one example. What Michael and Nadia are doing is very much a business-to-consumer product. They're marketing a product to the retail marketplace. Their end customer is the individual buyer. For other entrepreneurs, they're marketing to large corporations, and that's a very, very different mindset. It's a different environment. It has totally different implications about how you go to market. So, no, you don't have a particular mindset. I do think it tends to be people that have tenacity, that stick to things over time. It is indescribable how challenging this can be at times and how overwhelming it can be at times to start a business, to run a business. And by the way, the more successful that business is, the more the challenges come in. Now, they may be good challenges, but they're still challenges.
Michael Termini, I see you nodding in agreement there when we heard the word tenacity.
Well, and
what moment did you need tenacity?
It was the overwhelming part. It's that there is just a phenomenal amount to do every day. And those, as Mike just pointed out, and the challenges change every day based on, one good step and then five more that follow from it. And so you start the day behind and you end the day behind and that's really the big challenge in running a small firm.
Tell us a little bit, Mike, about how your business, Business Innovation Zone has changed in its 5 years of existence. We have about a minute before we take a break.
Well, it's changed a lot. So we launched the biz in 2007. And, of course, in 2008, the market pretty much collapsed. We had the greatest recession of our time. And that dried up a tremendous amount of capital. And what it caused was a lot of companies doing something new, startup companies doing something called bootstrapping, which comes from the term pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. But in essence, what you're hearing about here today is starting with your own resources and not starting in a very large way, but starting small and growing incrementally.
Okay, Mike, we want to follow up on that. You're staying with us the entire hour. Mike Caldwell, Executive Director of the Business Innovation Zone. We have to say goodbye to our other guests, Nada Brown and Michael Termini of Be Amazing Foods. A couple words on where you see yourself in 5 or 10 years?
Gosh, the future is so uncertain. I have no idea.
We'll just have to check back with you. Thanks for coming in. Nada
Thank
and
you.
Michael. We want to reach out to you and to tell us about your entrepreneurial spirit, if you've activated it, and to what end, and with what success. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or give us a tweet at IPR Talk. When we come back, we want to add to our discussion the discussion of co-working space, getting out of your office at home to work somewhere else. What advantages does that offer? We'll be back in just a few minutes with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with you this afternoon. Great to have you with us as we talk about entrepreneurship in Iowa. We are seeking that entrepreneurial spirit from you. Stories of perhaps something in your life that triggered you to move into business. Start some business, take over a business. What climate have you found there? Also this hour, I want to talk about co-working spaces, why that's different than working from your office home. What advantages are there? Perhaps you share a co-working space. Tell us about it. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org, our email. We're also on Facebook, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Mike Caldwell is with us, Executive Director of the Business Innovation Zone in Des Moines. He's been around about 5 years, partnering, helping out startup businesses, and we've been hearing from Mike about how that works. Let's go to our phones, first of all, to talk to Fritz, way up in Platteville, Wisconsin. Hi, Fritz. Thanks for tuning into Iowa Public Radio.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out someone, I think it was Maida, pointed out, or you asked something about health care. I just wanted to point out that health care is an important consideration. I know of an example. There was a microbrewery in Solon, Iowa.
Solon.
It was the Stone City Brewery. And they had an excellent product, and they had excellent demand for their beer. But someone in the family came down with diabetes, and they had to close up. So it was such a loss and a tragedy. They had such a going little business.
Fritz, thank you for mentioning that. Let's go to Iowa City. Mary is with us from Iowa City. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
Yes, what's on your mind?
Well, I just thought I would tell you that I also left one job for another, but it was a kind of a slow transition. I worked as a registered nurse at the University of Iowa for a number of years and got an injury and decided I needed to make a change. And politics was getting a little thick there, so I went on to study massage and have a sole proprietor business as a massage therapist.
Oh, and how are you on the happy-o-meter these days compared to your old
work?
Well,
it's, sometimes it's stressful on the physical, but the mental is very good.
Okay, Mary, thank you for sharing. Let's go to, is it Frederic in Elkader? Hi, Frederic. Did I get your name right?
You got it. Thanks for taking my call. Next time, last time I spoke to you, Ben, I was sitting next to you in your studio.
You were. Oh, great to have you with us. Yes, of course. You have the restaurant up there, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I just wanted to make a little comment. My partner and I moved back maybe 6 years ago back to Iowa. It was a personal decision for me because of the connection that Al-Qaeda had to Algeria and my dad being of Algerian descent. But I saw a need in craft beer. It became our restaurant became a destination because of the craft beers that we were offering. And for the longest time, it wasn't uncommon for me to drive 3-4 hours to pick up a keg of beer, till I started looking for distributors because it was getting a little overwhelming. And if you weren't in Des Moines or Iowa City, nobody was interested. So I said, "The hell with you! I'll start my own business." So I, in essence, gave up my share into the restaurant and started the craft beer distribution company. But I guess the comment that I had was that there is a lot of, it's not all hanky-dory. There's a lot of sacrifices. To this day, neither one of us has health insurance, and that's one of our sacrifices. But it's a lot of to take in, and it's a lot of challenges. If it's not the Turkey River flooding you out, it's many other things. So,
well, we hope those challenges will never be too much to keep your entrepreneurial spirit down. Frederic, thank you for joining us from Elkader today.
Hopefully we can get you guys up here sometime in the near future. We'd love to have you.
Thank you, Frederic, for the invitation. Bye now.
Bye.
So, Mike Caldwell, he mentioned craft beer. It's not hard to see that craft beer is a booming area of business. What other areas are really seeing an upswing, especially here in Iowa? Have you noticed?
Yeah, I think there's a couple areas that you see a lot on. First of all is technology applied to older issues or long-term issues, especially where someone's worked in an environment and said, you know, there's really a better way to solve this problem. There's a company in Carroll, Iowa called Agron that the gentlemen that started it were NRCS officers. They worked in county conservation. They understood the way that land was worked by farmers and how water flowed through it. But the tools and techniques to do things like waterways and ponds took months and sometimes even years to get done. And they applied some very, very new technology and moved those months and years down to literally hours. And so I think what you're seeing is people realizing some of the power of technology more recently, things like cloud computing and just the advances in general of ease of development, and applying it to two older problems that have been very difficult to solve.
Mike Caldwell of Business Innovation Zone in Des Moines. Let's move on now to a slightly different facet here. Co-working spaces have been touted as a great resource for small businesses and entrepreneurs. They're looking for a space to call their own. They can be found in large metropolitan areas. We know that. Many entrepreneurs, though, don't expect to find them in their local town, but that is changing. Veal Hoden was launched in October of 2010 in Pella, Iowa. Pella, population of around 10,000. Joel Bennett joins us from Pella. He's the owner of Veal Hoden in Pella. Good afternoon, Joel, and I hope I got the pronunciation of your Dutch-named firm correct.
Absolutely. You did a great job.
And, what does that mean, Veal Hoden?
It actually means many hats in Dutch. With being a Dutch community, we thought that was a great nod to both the many hats that small businesses each wear and also the many hats that people inside of our space were wearing. So,
Joel, for those not acquainted with co-working spaces, tell us who you are.
Well, co-working is a relatively new concept, even nationwide, and it's spread very quickly from the East and West Coast all around the world. And it's been interesting to see it move to the rural spaces. But in a nutshell, it's allowing people who would typically work at home or be more mobile workers, folks that just need a laptop and a Wi-Fi connection and their cell phone to work, whether for their own business or for other businesses, a place to work that's not a coffee shop or a restaurant or a public library. And so typically you see these spaces pop up and allow multiple people, whether it be office space or just really kind of tabletop, desktop spaces, to work during the day to get their businesses going and moving.
Mm-hmm. So if you give us a sort of a radio tour of eye, what do we see when we walk in the front door? Do we see people in their own little spaces? Do we see a common area? What do we see?
Most co-working spaces are going to have some sort of a common area. It could be a lot of places we'll call their living room. Well, it'll look a little bit like the living room at your home. Maybe it'll have a couch and a chair, but typically some other larger tables or small desks where people can drop in with their laptop and work. You typically will also see some areas for conference rooms or larger tables so that teams can work together, or sometimes individuals working together on different projects but just want to collaborate or talk throughout the day. And that's really the draw of co-working. It's really less about space and more about collaboration and the ideas that come out of, you know, businesses working together, even if it's on different projects.
Mm-hmm. So even if do the businesses that are associated, how many hats do you have at Veal Hoden? How many different businesses are represented right now?
We have roughly a dozen businesses that are represented there. And that fluctuates from month to month because we do have what we call mobile members, folks that drop in month to month like a gym membership. But for the most part, once people have come into our space, they've stayed. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we always talked about our end goal in this is that somebody would stay only to the point where they felt like they can then go out on their own and get their own space. And so really in some ways like an incubator or kind of a warming oven for some of these businesses, but others have really taken off and done well.
Mm, interesting. Stay with us, Joel Bennett. We want to check in with Gwen Barker, who is in our Des Moines studio, owner of Gwen Baker Productions, a video production services company in Des Moines. Gwen, it is Baker, correct?
It's Barker, actually.
It's
Gwen Barker Productions.
One keystroke wrong messes the whole thing up. I know.
It's all right. It's a common problem.
Gwen Barker, forgive me. I'm sorry. You now work out of a co-working space called Space to Work in Des Moines. You started freelance in video production in 2009, I understand, from your home. Why didn't that work as well as what you're doing right now?
Well, I think the nature of the job, I definitely benefit from having conference rooms, conference tables, a really nice image for my business. It's amazing how many times my dogs have to go outside when I'm home. So just typical, you know, distractions, I would say.
Right. You have the kitchen. You have the couch. You have the TV.
Exactly.
You have that book that is on the nightstand, right?
Correct. And, you know, you find yourself also working too late at night sometimes. It's really nice to have that balance between home and work, to have a place to go.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about your business, what you actually do in video production.
I manage video production. So typically I might be hired by ad agencies as a freelance producer on their behalf or Other companies hire me to manage their video production. So that's the core of what I do.
Mm-hmm. And I understand this is not your first co-working space. You've been in several.
Yes. When I first moved to Des Moines, I was in a couple different co-working spaces, Impromptu Studios when that was around, Foundry Co-working. I've bounced around a little bit, but space to work definitely fulfills all of what I was looking for.
So, you've visited several co-working spaces. Do they all have a different character, a different atmosphere?
Oh, definitely. The first space I was in was a little bit more casual. The second space I was in gave me the formalities that I was looking for. I needed my own office. So whereas a lot of co-working spaces, you get to hang out with people and be in the same common areas a bunch, I needed the balance between the common areas and the office space because I do a lot of phone calls and things like that. So I really benefit from having my own office.
Joel Bennett of Veel Hoden in Pella, in your co-working space, what qualities to give your space when you say we just heard from Gwen that not all of these spaces are the same? How do you describe yours specifically?
Well, I think ours would be very similar. She mentioned Impromptu Studios. They were one of the early adopters in Des Moines of the co-working movement. We are a bit more casual and laid back, but we've kind of tried to take the best of both worlds. We'd have 7 different offices there for companies to lease, and so that allows them that, you know, private space for phone calls and meeting with clients. But we find most of the folks there actually leave their doors open throughout the rest of the day and interact with people on a regular basis because they do like that collaborative spirit. But we're probably a bit more relaxed and casual than, some of the places you would expect in like an executive suites or like a Regis where, it's much more formal.
What about the cost compared to renting your own office space downtown somewhere?
Well, there's definitely, that's definitely one of the draws for small businesses because, commercial property is rather expensive. For the folks that are mobile members through us, they pay $55 a month, and that's for 24/7 access to our space. You're going to see, obviously, different price points in different locations. A more metropolitan area is going to, obviously have higher prices. And our office spaces are right around $200 a month, and they're about 100 square feet. So It's been a great mix for us, and really encourages and allows small businesses to make their home there.
Mm-hmm. So in Pella, Iowa, 100 square feet, and then you have the common area and all access to all the other areas in there too. $100 a month, okay. Gwen Barker, when you're operating in co-working spaces, you find there are sort of do's and don'ts, and people that you think work well in these areas, and personality types that perhaps don't.
I would say the most of the people that find themselves in co-working spaces, I would say we're all pretty like-minded. I haven't run into too many situations where I would wish that somebody had their own building. People gravitate to the entrepreneurial spirit. It's a personality type.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all get along really well. We all know the barriers that we need, but then also entrepreneurs, we like to feed off of each other. We like to have that interaction. And so it encourages both sides of our personalities, I would say, the times when we really have to hunker down and the times when we really need to gain inspiration from each other.
So you get valuable information, insights from people who are not in video production, from people doing something completely different, who have an idea of what you do because they work near you and offer something.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I've had some really stimulating conversations with people who work in the tech industry or work in nonprofits, and there are actually times that we find we can help out each other or that we could be each other's clients or we can collaborate on something. And those are opportunities you don't have when you work from home.
And also from home, do you find that when you're pitching your product to a new client that it's just easier to say that you have an office rather than you work out of?
Yeah, definitely.
it legitimizes you, right?
It does. It legitimizes your business. It's also an investment in your business. I mean, it's not cheap to add this cost to your bottom line every month, but it really makes it great that you can have a space for your clients. You really feel like you've taking it to the next level, I would say.
Eve is joining us from Coralville. Hi, Eve. We're coming to close to the end of the hour. What's your take on this?
I just graduated from Kirkwood Community College with a certificate in entrepreneurship, and I would like to encourage anyone who has a thought about their own business to talk to their community college or one of the region's universities. Many of them have programs, too, in order to walk through the whole procedure. Like, our classes took a year under accelerated, or you can take as long as you need. But it gives you an opportunity to put down a business plan and to have an opportunity to present it to people who may even decide, hey, I want to finance you right now. So it's a really good chance to see, what do I want? How am I going to do it? Is it practical? And who knows? Somebody might say, I like it. Let's talk.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations on getting that certificate, Eve. What would you say is the most surprising thing you learned in getting that about entrepreneurship, perhaps a myth or a misconception that you had beforehand?
That you can go. The thing I think most people think is that if I have a really fantastic idea, the better mousetrap, that the world will beat a path to your door, they may, but having a business plan in hand validates you in front of people who are most likely to invest, because it means you thought the whole thing through.
Mm, okay. Not just the idea, but you thought how to reach the goal of actually creating a company, selling a product or a service. Eve, thank you very much. Mike Caldwell, can you teach entrepreneurship?
That is a question that's debated globally. I don't think you can teach all of it. I think you can show people who are motivated to be an entrepreneur some of the techniques and things you can do. I think part of it is personality, and I think it's part of it is being ready to do it. You can be an entrepreneurial person but not be at that point in your life when you're ready to go commit the time.
Mm-hmm. Joel Bennett there in Pella at your shared working space, your co-working space there. We talked earlier in our program about the demographics of entrepreneurship. In fact, the 50s, people in their 50s and 60s are most of the people who are launching businesses. What about under your roof, with your many hats, what are the age differences?
Well, I think the misperception is that all the entrepreneurs out there are in their 20s and 30s and starting Facebook companies. But the truth is, when we opened up 2 years ago, we had somebody in our roof that was making Google apps for phones, and he was in his 20s. And we had another gentleman there that was 67 and doing exactly the same thing. He was writing phone apps. We have all types of people there, men, women. But you definitely do see, the folks in their 50s and 60s stepping up to the plate, whether it be second or third careers. Maybe they've retired and decided they want to step out and tackle that idea they've been thinking about for a number of years. And so it's definitely maybe breaking some paradigms and some misperceptions out there about entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm. You're in Pella, Mike. You are in Des Moines, as is Gwen. What about other listeners listening in other communities? What would be the first step to find out if there's a co-working area in your community or just more about entrepreneurship? Give us some resources before we have to say goodbye for this hour. Mike.
So a couple of things I can tell you is to talk to your economic development group, talk to your Chamber of Commerce, talk to other entrepreneurs. Go meet 10 or 20 people who have started their own business and ask them how they did it and ask them who helped them.
Mm-hmm. Gwen, I wonder if you ever yearn for a regular job.
Hasn't happened yet.
Hasn't happened. You've never had a 9-to-5 job where you're working for someone else?
No, I did. I did when I first started out. But now that I've been on my own, it's as tempting as it is sometimes to accept that staff position. I just can't make myself do it yet.
And Joel Bennett, tell us about the other businesses that you run. You run a nonprofit ministry organization.
Correct. I started a nonprofit ministry called A Call to Serve Ministries, or ACTS Ministries, that operates out of Pella and Marion County. And we work with disadvantaged, low-income families on home repairs and maintenance and really trying to encourage volunteers in the community to connect with people that need a hand to use their skills to help out.
Mike, in closing, I wonder if I can ask you this question quickly. How has Iowa changed in terms of being entrepreneur-friendly in the last few years?
Well, I think there's been a dramatic change, and I think it's come from a lot of different places. I think some of the smaller towns have realized that to remain vibrant, they've got to keep and attract people. And you're not going to do that all the time by just bringing in large corporations. So I think they're adding it to the mix. I don't think it's the only thing out there. I think you need the mix, but I think that's one. And also, I think more and more people on their own are going out and forming groups to talk about this, whether they're formal or informal.
And compared to other states, Iowa, in terms of entrepreneurship and supporting that, fostering that?
So 5-6 years ago, we were somewhere between number 43 and number 46 on the Kauffman list, and that's obviously out of 50 states. And this year, I think we broke the top 25, so we're moving forward.
Excellent. I want to thank you all for joining us this hour. Mike Caldwell, Joel Bennett, and Gwen Barker, thank you all for sharing your perspectives as we discussed entrepreneurship in Iowa. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Catherine Perkins, and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Emily Woodbury. Technical support from Dennis Reese in Des Moines. Help from John Pemble, the executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows, is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio of this program, River to River, available at iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music is written and performed by the River Monks. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Politics Wednesday tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.